This is a Defocus Media production. What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode.
Hey, Jen. How are you doing today? Happy Wednesday. Happy Wednesday.
Well, I'm Jen Lyerly. Obviously, this is Dr. Daryl Glover. And Daryl, you know, a lot of people have seen our posts on social media, but you are now a father to not just a wonderful son, but a beautiful little girl. So congrats.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, it's a little different, I must admit. You know, my wife is my everything, but now I got a new woman in my life. So, you know, this is changing the game for me a little bit. You know, I look down at her smile and I'm just like, oh my goodness, what am I supposed to do? And, you know, it's the same feeling with my son, but, you know, my son, I'm teaching him to be a man. So, like, I have to check him and do all that. And I don't know how I'm going to do this with my daughter, Jen. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm lost in the sauce right now.
No, you do it the exact same way, and their personalities are going to be different. Who they are as people is going to be different. They're going to react differently, and you'll just naturally grow together. That's what I think.
There you go. See, the wonderful wise words of wisdom from Jim.
I only have one child, so I don't know. So that's what I would do if I was having another.
Thank you, Dr. Sandy. Thank you. Thank you so much. Shout out to Dr. Sandy. A wealth of knowledge there for sure.
Well, we're excited about tonight's topic because, you know, for many of us, whether we have actual children or not, our baby is definitely our practice, whether we own that practice or just work in that practice. And working in practice, you have your own challenges. And Daryl and I, we're both optometrists, but we always talk about opticians in our office, our technicians, our staff. They are our partners in making this happen every single day, and we cannot be successful without them. And I view definitely everybody who works on our team as an equally important team member. And we love doing episodes where we bring opticians on because we have so much to learn from them. And again, so essential to everything that our patient experiences. So we have the pleasure of bringing on Sean. He is the founder of Modern Optician. And an optician in Canada.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on the show.
So Sean, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the career of being an optician.
Sure. So like you said, I'm an optician. To be honest, I wish I had a really glamorous story as to how I became an optician. I unfortunately don't. Like most opticians, kind of fell into the career. A typical story. I was a good student. I went to university. I got a degree in biochemistry, and then I got my papers and walked out the door and said, now what, right? No job prospects or anything for, you know, the career I'd chosen. So I had to look for something. And here in Canada, it just so happens, and primarily in Ontario, it just so happens opticianry is a great career. I'll allude to it a little bit more while we talk. And my hope is that, you know, it could be a great career like that everywhere in North America and the world. It was the best decision of my life. Met my wife in opticianry school. We're married 10 years now, almost 10 years. I've had an opportunity to really grow with the profession and try to help, you know, push it forward as well.
That's so crazy. We know so many optometry couples, but I think this is our first opticianry couple.
They're more common than you'd think, right? Those long study nights, I guess.
Not to get off and be messy, Jim, but I remember being in optometry school and seeing these couples, man. It was a hot-ass mess, but it was a lot of great entertainment going. Can I say that with you, Sean? But it was in optometry school, I must admit.
It made a beautiful coupling. A lot of my friends found their partners in optometry school.
Yeah, you never run out of things.
The time of your life for finding the right people.
For sure. Well, look, Sean, I can tell you this, man. I'm super excited to have this interview with you because I'm a big fan of being able to communicate lens technology with my patients and also my team members. So I'm really ready to learn, listen, engage, and have actionable items to go into my office tomorrow and make some magic happen. So I'm ready to jump into this, Jen. How about yourself?
Oh, for sure. let's get right in. Why did you start Modern Optician? And what is Modern Optician in case
absolutely. Not familiar? So Modern Optician is actually a training platform. So it's an opportunity to, especially for, you know, for individuals and for practice owners to really have an avenue to train their staff. And most recently we've launched Opto Academy, which is geared directly to entry level staff, because there's a big hole there, right? And we're going to talk a little bit about onboarding and retention and things like that. And I think training and getting people comfortable in the practice is a huge, huge part of that, right? So actually my story to starting Modern Optician is actually kind of funny, because I actually left opticianry for some time. I worked in you know, your typical optical practice for 3 or 4 years, and I had an opportunity to work in refractive surgery. So I went over and I loved it. It was such a great experience. But when I was there, I was working with some pretty highly trained people. We were in Ottawa at the time, which is the nation's capital, and actually home of one of the biggest ophthalmology training centers in the country. And so the staff was super knowledgeable. Everybody was, you know, top tier. But I seemed to be the go-to all the time because of my technical knowledge, right? Because as soon as a patient came in, sure, you know, when it came to the clinical side, yeah, everybody had, you know, had a pretty good handle on it. However, when it came to, you know, managing the little things, like what happens when, you know, when the refractive, there's a little bit of refractive error left over and we have to correct it. Everyone looked at a pair of glasses like it was like a foreign object, right? Because it was not part of the you know, not part of the model. So really started to see that, you know, there's a gap. There is a gap on that side of it. And then, you know, life changes and we moved to a different city and had an opportunity to work back in opticianry. So I went back, and then the same thing happened there. I gained all this clinical knowledge about, you know, how refractive error truly works and how we correct in refractive surgery. And we were doing clear lens exchange. I had an opportunity to work in cross-linking and doing all sorts of things. And like all this wealth of knowledge now got transferred to the more technical side. And then, you know, we don't talk about it a lot, but, you know, I just mentioned things about lens technology and things like that, which is great. But we also tend to forget about the fact that there's a lot of pathology, there's a lot of visual acuity issues and things that factor into that thing. It doesn't matter what the lens technology is. If you're not factoring those things in, then, you know, you're behind the eight ball. Now, most optometrists are going to be well-versed in that. But the optician, on the other hand, often takes the prescription and assumes that everything's, you know, good to go. And then that's where they run into problems, because they're not, you know, mixing the clinical with the technical. So that's where Modern Optician really comes in. The idea that opticianry is changing, you know, eye care is changing, you know, and just to mention, you know, I was working in refractive surgery. You had days where you thought, geez, you know, in 20 years from now, everyone and their grandmother is going to be having refractive surgery between LASIK and refractive lens exchange. You wonder if there's going to be anyone left wearing glasses. Obviously not the truth yet, but it's one of those things where, you know, I want opticians to diversify. I want them to adapt and change with, you know, with the field. And this is an opportunity to mold those two things together and to be able to work in any practice and be effective.
Let's talk a little bit about, because I think, you know, for many optometrists, unfortunately, we can be very unfamiliar with the education and training that goes into being an optician, because it's not uncommon in the US for, yes, you have licensing programs where you can get licensed opticians, but many people work with optical staff that they aren't really differentiating from opticians that have no career training, that are getting kind of just on the job training and performing almost the same duties. So talk a little bit about your training and why you feel like that's creating a lot of misperceptions or confusions actually.
Sure, and you know what, you're not wrong about that. And the reality is that it may surprise you to hear that there are some situations where the perception that training internally is better may not completely be wrong. It really depends on, you know, where you are, the access you have to a properly trained optician and things like that. And you know, things have changed, you know. In some states, they have vocational programs. Here in Canada, it's 100% vocational. Licensure is absolutely mandatory, highly regulated, and you have exceptional opticians here. You know, as a matter of fact, you know, if you have an optometric practice that also has a dispensary, hands off. The optometrist does not have to worry about the dispensary whatsoever because it's managed. However, most of my clients tend to be in the U.S., And there's varying degrees of what an optician is, right? You can't see my quotation marks here, but there they are. So it's really dependent on where you are and what's going on. Now, I'm a huge advocate of internal training, as long as the internal training is well done. And this is what we try to achieve here. And not just me, there's a lot of individuals out there who are, you know, starting to get on board with training people, you know, through online mediums and things like that. But as long as the training is done, and really the reality is, and I'd like to discuss it more, is the fact that you really can be effective at training inside your practice. You as the optometrist are a phenomenal resource. It's about being that mentor and guiding the soon to be optician through. And in a lot of states, you know, becoming an optician is such a low barrier to entry. And those are the ones that you really need to take advantage of. You know, if you have staffing issues and you want an optician, and it's as easy as training them internally and having them become ABO certified through just, you know, exams and things like that, why wouldn't you? Because, you know, now you have a much more effective staff member and a much more engaged and empowered staff member as well.
Well, I love the fact that it's not completely impossible for optometrists to be able to try to make training happen in their own practices. And then what I found is many times once you start training people up and they get inspired by the career, then they're interested in going on and getting their actual degree and certification. So sometimes it's a launching pad to a greater and broader career, which is so great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the thing is that the big thing, and I wanted to say it before I got off track. The big thing that we look for here is empowerment, because the idea, if you're offering a job, well, there's plenty of jobs out there, you know, and the reason people have a difficult time at optometric practices have a hard time with onboarding is because if you're posting it on job sites and things like that, you have job seekers who are just looking for a job. And how are you differentiating yourself from just that job? Well, the important thing here is that you have to be offering a career. And, you know, when you create an online business like this, you think, you know, one of the common things you do is you think of an avatar. You think of, who am I trying to serve? Mm-hmm. And I think of, you know, my avatar is a single mom, somebody who can't go back to school, somebody who has, you know, bills and has a family to support, but, you know, has the brains and know-how and drive to be able to pursue a career. And that's what we should be offering in our practices, is careers, not jobs.
You know what, Sean, that's music to my ears. And that's something that we really preach within our organization. And, you know, Jen and I were both millennials. I'm more seasoned than her. And, you know, we get that shame that, you know, we do one job, we move on to the next. So we're not really looking for careers. We kind of job hop for the most part. And I think that's not right. I think that's unfair. You know, being a millennial, I've been with the same organization for probably almost 15, 20 years almost, you know, and for me, I've been able to build a career. And when you really pose the picture of being able to have career growth, it shows empowerment. It shows that you can grow. It shows that you care, and it makes you more effective in that exam room or on that optical showroom floor or working with that patient because you care, because you know this is not the end. This is not just going to be sell a pair of glasses and I'm done. It's I'm empowering someone, I'm helping someone live their best life, and we're going to take it to the next level. And I know that the sky's the limit for me due to this career path that I have sitting in front of me. So I'm with you 200%, my man. That is exactly what we need.
Good, good. And it makes you feel good too, right? You're helping somebody achieve their goals and better their lives. And, you know, obviously their life improves because of it. But, and, you know, you're not being selfish, and you feel good about it too, because you've actually helped somebody move on and better their lives. Right. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, man. You got church going, man. People saying, keep preaching, my man. So, hey, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. You know, shout out to David Duffy. Agreed. Careers give people pride and joy. He loves what we're doing. Thanks, David. Good to see you. It's one of my colleagues there. We got another comment here. Dr. Sandy, offering careers, not jobs, so true. Without proper onboarding and training, you are not maximizing the career you're giving your team and ultimately your patients. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. If you're not setting up career for your team members, Your patients will suffer more than anyone else. Your loyalty will suffer. And of course, at the end of the day, your bottom line suffers. So you really have to take it to the next level and present careers for these potential team members. And this is not just for opticians. This is for optometrists. This is for front desk people. This is for technicians. You have to give them some type of vision of where they're going so they don't stay stagnant and not want to grow. You got to give them vision.
100%.
Sean, I want to pick your brain. Let's start at the beginning. We're talking about job posting. All right. So what do you need to do in the job posting to find career seekers instead of job seekers?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, you say it, right? So, you know, here's the thing. Imagine yourself as somebody who's looking to get a job. And you have some aspirations. You'd love to get into healthcare or something like that. And you see a posting that lists all sorts of qualifications that would be preferred, all the different things that, you know, all the different responsibilities they would do. And then you see, and let's face it, like, I mean, the elephant in the room, you're not gonna be able to pay these people high salaries at the beginning. And right. Then you see a posting next to it for Foot Locker, where all you have to do is fold clothes and sell shoes. Which one is the person going to take? And you know, and there's also the concept of you're working for a doctor, which can be intimidating to some people. So they might take the job that seems easier and less likely to be, you know, as intimidating. I think you should be talking about careers immediately. I think, you know, and this is where the concept of modern optician. We talk about this a lot. Sorry, I'm just going to plug this in because I think I'm losing power. There we go. We talk about the concept of you take the career seriously, and you basically have the candidate immediately look towards a career, right? So, sorry, I lost my train of thought because of my. I want to make sure this power is still working good. Go ahead,
Sean. Technical all over the place. Look, sometimes we got kids running on the show.
That's
sometimes
true.
My computer, you see me disappear because my computer died, and I'm jumping up or texting
Jenny. We are the
about to die. So do what you got to do, my man. It's all good. We here for you.
I've got it. I've got the train back, so it's okay. So, you know, if you're looking at this job posting and the perks or what the job is offering is a career and the chance for advancement. And, you know, modern optician is built, you know, towards opticians. So the concept of saying, you know, come on board, obviously you'll use better language than I'm using, but better copy. But, you know, come on board and we will offer you a career. We'll offer you advancement. And it's the concept of not preaching, you know, what the responsibilities will be, but what the possibilities are, right? So we do this in our practice all the time. I've hired numerous people that it's the moment we encounter them, and I want to mention something in a second about the posting, but the moment we encounter them, we let them know that they're in, if they come on board with us, they're in for the long haul. You know, we are going to train them to, the end goal is to be a professional of some sort. And the thing is that opticianry is the main focus of our brand. However, who's to say they can't do something else? We talk about technicians. When's the last time you said to somebody, you know what, I think you'd be a good orthoptist, or hey, you're pretty artsy, I bet you'd be a good ocularist. There's no kid sitting in elementary school saying one day I'm going to be an ocularist. And how are they going to find out about these professions that they're dying and we need them? And so we are, you know, we're the ones who are aware of all this stuff, and we are the leaders that have to guide people into these careers. And so that's really the focus here in Opto Academy. We don't just focus on saying you're going to be an optician once you're done this. It's not at all like that. It's pick your path in eye care, but we're here to support you. Your employer is here to support you. And, you know, we'll find a way to make you effective in this practice, and we'll grow around you.
Yeah, we had recently, early in summer, hired two employees that are recent undergraduate degrees, and kind of seem really similar to what you're talking about, Sean. The posting was really geared towards, are you interested in a career that combines both science and fashion, both healthcare and style? And that was really drawing to them, you know, as people who graduated with undergraduate degrees in science-based, but they were interested in pursuing a more artistic type of path. And I, you know, here's the thing though, right? Like no experience, no exposure to this profession. So we've got to start from the ground up. And one of the other things that I've been talking to them about recently is, okay, like I want you to get interested in this as a profession. So besides the training, like let's get you a subscription to Envision magazine. Like let's, I want you looking at other opticals, like follow these accounts online. Like you got to just absorb all of this stuff and get passionate about it.
Yeah. Fully immersed. Right. Absolutely. And the other thing that we were talking about with the posting, right? I'm not a big fan of posting for jobs. We work in an industry where we see, you know, dozens of people every day. And chances are that a handful of them are probably interested in changing careers. And, you know, 90% of my hiring I've ever done in my career has been from a patient that's come through the office for a couple of reasons. First, you put a posting up, and the only thing that you can deal with here is the interview, and you get a, that's the only way you're going to get a feel for the person. Well, some good candidates are really good interviewers. You know who else are good interviewers? Horrible people too, because this is it's a learned skill. You know, I mean, anybody could fake it for half an hour.
Right.
You know where you really find out if someone's a good candidate? When you bring them in, you dilate them. They don't wig out. But I'm just saying, don't just dilate them just because. But you know, they go through the whole process, and it's not just interacting with you; it's interacting with your staff, because you know, there's a lot of opportunities from the moment they check in at reception, through pre-testing, through the exam. If you have a dispensary, if they're buying glasses, that's when you see people's true colors, and that's an opportunity to really kind of vet people and say, you know, they had an opportunity to really show me who they are, and they were a great person. And that's the person, that's the kind of person I want in my practice. Then you move on to the interviews and you get into the, you know, more detailed kind of questioning and stuff. But you know what? I think if more people did it this way, if more practice owners did it this way, they wouldn't have a hiring issue. Sure, you know, you put a posting up, you're competing with the Arby's and the Foot Lockers and all the different things that are paying the same wage. You find somebody who you like their personality right up front. Now all of a sudden you've got a head start on the game because you've circumvented the whole message or the job board. You've gotten ahead of the game.
Yeah, you know, that's that. I love that. I mean, Jay, think about this. How many people walk through our doors every day? That's a potential person that could join the team and you know, help patients live their best lives, right? By just watching how they move from front desk to the technician piece to the exam room to the optical showroom floor. Then you have four or five different personalities that have actually had conversation with that person. You can vet each one of those people. And then when they leave or they're about to, you know, process their glasses, are you looking for a job? I think you'd be great at this, you know? And then you could just really do the vetting just like Sean stated. Man, that is phenomenal. I wonder why we're not doing that. That makes perfect sense. I mean, the worst someone can say is, I have a job and I'm happy. I'm not trying to do any of this.
Yeah.
But they might know a friend. I mean, yeah.
But I mean, we often take occupation down in our screening in our medical history.
Very,
I mean, if the person's a software engineer, then you're probably barking up the wrong tree. But if they work in retail, if they work in the restaurant industry, 90% of those people are looking for something else, and it comes down to career again. You see somebody who has a job, and you say, "Well, I can offer you a career," and that's how the conversation starts.
Yeah. All right, let's get in. We've hired a great candidate, but what are many doctors' offices doing wrong when it comes to onboarding and staff training?
So, I mean, one thing that most doctors' offices are doing is that they're taking their existing staff to train new staff. Now, if you have a rock star in there that really knows what they're doing, maybe that'll work, but it might not. Even if you have that rock star, it doesn't mean that interpersonally they're going to work well with the new staff. It doesn't mean they're a good teacher. Maybe they're really good at what they do, but you know, we all know that being a good, you know, facilitator and a good mentor is a completely different skill set than being good at the task.
100%.
Yeah. So, you know, this is where using programs or using something that you can trust really allows you to know that, you know, trust what is being taught. And the other thing too, it's not just for the new staff, it's also the existing staff. I just had an interaction with a receptionist today who's been a receptionist for us for a while. Well, for not my office, but a different office. And they was a contact lens issue. And she wasn't sure, you know, if this was a biweekly or a monthly lens. And she flat out said to me, I wish somebody would have told me that. And that's a huge gap because you figure, and you know, as an optometrist, you're extremely busy. And especially as a practice owner, you wear many hats. You don't have time to keep a finger on the pulse of the staff, knowing exactly who knows what, who's good at what. You just assume things are going okay, right? And then when you're training, you're assuming that all the things that you're passionate about and that the patient is being served properly, that's being, you know, transferred by some of your senior staff members. But we all know just because you're a senior staff member doesn't mean you're effective and proficient, right? So it's a challenge. It really, really is. Because you're not going to have time to sit down and train these people. You have to have somebody who does it for them. And yeah, it's a challenge in every single practice. But this is why programs help, because it's an opportunity to have consistency. Not only, you know, consistency across the board for every staff member, but also you know exactly what a new employee that you've onboarded is being exposed to.
Right. You know, I think this also kind of goes into this, but this is something I see all the time where doctors feel pretty confident, like, oh, my staff does this and they know how to do this. What are some of the things that most doctors, you feel like they think their staff knows, but they don't? Like, you shouldn't be just sure. Assuming that. So and the monthly, biweekly, that's a common one I see.
It ranges from simple stuff, like what we just said, to more complicated things. And I'm a huge advocate. I'm going to use an analogy for you. Okay. I bring my truck to the garage. I admittedly know very little about vehicles. But when I go to the front desk, I expect that the attendant knows things like, you know, muffler, carburetor, whatever, things that I don't know. And you know what, from my experience, for the most part, they do. I would be willing to bet that most of the listeners and viewers, if I were to go to your office and start using buzzwords around your staff, things that we think they should know, they probably wouldn't know. Do you think, and you know, like if anything from, you know, what we just mentioned about different types of lenses, to even understanding different types of procedures or tests that patients have undergone, I'd be willing to bet that a high percentage of staff members don't know what a YAG is, don't know what an iridotomy is. But why wouldn't they? They're in the profession, you know. And these are important things. When you're taking these are the staff members that are collecting medical history. These are the staff members that are, you know, screening patients. Understanding what all these things are and what they mean are definitely important. I encourage every practice owner to, you know, write down a list of things that they think their staff should know and quiz them. I mean, obviously, this could be a high stress thing and people don't always perform well under stress, but you'd probably be surprised to find out that, you know, it hasn't been an emphasis from the moment they started there.
One of the things, Darylynn, I would love to get your experiences, but probably the biggest things I found in my clinic is if you think your staff is doing a cover test for you, you're sorely mistaken. That is not a skill. Unless you have a optometry school student as your technician, they are not going to be able to do a cover test for you. And then prism. If a person comes in, unless they tell the optician, there is prism in my glasses, you will never know that your patient, that's a new patient, has prism right now.
Never ever know. That's 100% true.
It's like a remake later. You've always had 3 diopters of prism in your glasses.
I ask practice owners all the time, if do you own a dispensary? And if they say yes, I say, how often do you find yourself having to go in a dispensary in order to troubleshoot something? If the answer is at any time, it means something's falling apart. Mm-hmm. How often do you have to send patients back for OCT or for field tests when they should have had one? That's a missed opportunity, because realistically, your staff should be able to recognize either systemic or ocular conditions that warrant these tests, right? That's another big, big gap, because and not only is it a missed opportunity for the patient experience, it's also a bottleneck in the process as well, right? Another one is, you know, and we could talk about delegation, but if you have great staff, you could definitely delegate many of the simpler tasks and work on nothing but high level tasks that you were trained for, right? I don't know how many listeners or viewers do a contact lens teach. I've seen lots of optometrists do contact lens teaches. Why? You know, this is something that you should be delegating to competent staff, and it again empowers them because it's a good feeling. You know, not many receptionists can tell you that they sat at school in elementary school and said, one day I'm going to be an awesome receptionist. You know, they want more. Give them more.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm this is on topic, but off topic. And I apologize. I tend to do that at times. But I'm curious to know, being that you do so much training at, you know, different practices, probably private, corporate, whatever you can think of, boutique style, how frequently do you run into technicians or optical team members not understanding how to truly read glasses and rely solely on an automatic or automated lensometer? Because I'm from the old school. I was a technician before I went to optometry school. I sold glasses before I went to optometry school. Yeah. And I was trained on a lensometer. You know, that old thing where you got to turn it, put your eye in there, get in there, figure it out. But I've seen, and this is, you know, not just, you know, my practice, but my colleagues' practices, and, you know, when I'm hearing, you know, different things on boards about education of team members, it seems like no one is really using the manual lensometer anymore. Everyone's going to the automated. And that kind of scares me, because there's a lot of error that can take place on both ends. But if you don't know the basics, how can you move to that next step? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
No, talk to me, man. Please educate me, my man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? You know what's creating this problem is, unfortunately, large corporate optical.
Grab somebody
off the street and says, you know, here you go. You can do it all. Just use this machine. Yeah, you're right. And, you know, fortunately, here in Canada, use of like a manual lensometer is like that absolute must, right? Like that's the way that everything's done. But once you get into practice, things change, right? And I'm guilty of it. I at times use the automatic lensometer, but you know, if I have 50 jobs to verify, and you know, I run them. However, I do have the technical skill to use a manual one. And therefore, you know, I can detect if something doesn't seem right, if there's any kind of error that, you know, that needs to be verified, you know, more closely. I would never neutralize a pair of glasses that, let's say I was doing a reproduction for somebody. There's no way I would ever use an automatic one, right? Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead.
The solution to this, Daryl, is you don't have an automatic lensometer, or neither of the offices do. So you have to be able to use the manual one.
That's and it comes down to what we were talking about. Like, if you don't have a staff member competent in this, guess who's training to use the lensometer? You are. And you know how long it can take a new staff member a long time to be accurate, right? Yeah. So again, championing a staff member as a lead mentor is definitely a good idea in every practice, right? And somebody you can trust. However, we talked about the pitfalls of that too, right? That you have to make sure that it's somebody who's a good mentor and you know, will be responsive to all the new staff that you bring in.
One of the other things that I think doctors might be assuming is, especially if you have someone who is experienced in the career, and many times when we, as practice owners, put out job feelers, you know, what's ideal instead of training up a new employee, right? Is like, oh, I'd love to get an experienced optician with, you know, a body of work. And those employees are hard to find, but when you find them, you just, you're guilty for many of us to think, okay, oh, they know what they're doing. Turn them loose. And it's, you'll be surprised at how philosophy of prescribing can vary greatly between providers. And the optician or the other doctor or whatever, they're not wrong. And I always, I'm quick to tell people this. They're just a different mindsets. But I've had in many occasions, I'll have a conversation with a parent in a room about a pair of glasses. And let's say this happened the other day. I have a patient, he's a minus one myope, no complaints except for now going back into school with like a long distance vision. So this is a kid, first time pair of glasses. I'm talking to mom about options and, you know, they're very interested in just getting one pair. He's not going to wear them around the house. He's not going to wear them on the computer or to read. He's just going to use them for classroom and then maybe some sort of outdoor activities or sports, because he's starting to notice it a little bit with kind of long range baseball and stuff. And so I was talking to them about, let's do transitions, for example. So he'll have the UV protection. Then I get out to my optician and they're like, well, if you're only getting one pair, they need to be blue blockers because he's a student, he's in school, he needs to have blue light protection. And I was like, well, that's the opposite of what I just talked to them about. And so now it's very confusing to the parent. And they're not wrong, right? Like, that's totally understandable that they believe in that technology and that science. But that's not how I presented it to the patient. And We all have to be on the same page. So training philosophy of prescribing and how you want to have conversations with your patients is really, really important.
Yeah, for sure.
And then just their knowledge. I mean, like, they got to be more knowledgeable. I mean, like, you know, even if you came up and you were talking about transitions and they wanted to add that blue light protection, they can say that, hey, you know, transitions has some blue light protection built into it as well.
I was about to say, no blue light gets through transition material.
Right. Like, you just gotta they gotta be more knowledgeable. And to your point, Sean, that, you know, Jen and I were taking in, we have to do a better job, not just, you know, with us training, but maybe looking at a third party to come in and really focus on what they do best. If you have a company that solely trains, you have all the checks and balances to know what to look for, and that's what your primary focus is. We do get caught up with the day-to-day activities of patients coming in. We know that almost every organization, every profession out there does not have enough team members, so we are skipping some of these boxes, and we're not giving the opportunity for, and it's sad to say, I mean, when you sit down and look at it, because it's a common thing we're hearing, but we're not giving them the opportunity to grow because we're trying to focus on the immediate problem of seeing all these patients that are coming in.
Yeah. And the thing is too, is your staff won't tell you they want to grow. You know, it's the same kind of, you know, philosophy that people are nervous and, you know, hesitate asking for raises. It's an awkward conversation. It's not an easy conversation to tell your employer that, you know, I think I can do more and I want more and I want a career out of this. You know, if you're waiting for them to tell you, you'll probably never hear it. It's about finding the diamonds in the rough, you know, recognizing that a staff member is underutilized and that they can be used for much bigger and better things and, you know, benefit from it at the same time. The other thing we were talking about with, you know, to finish your thought about the optician, you brought out a great point, is that if you do hire an optician, you have this, you're absolutely right, prescribing philosophy, how different ailments are treated and things like that. It has to be an open dialogue. Because there's nothing worse than not being on the same page between the dispensary and the exam room. Patients sense that, right? Yeah. Well, he or she told me this and you're telling me that. You should never be hearing that. Everybody should be on the same page. It's a sore subject in some practices. I'm a huge fan of, you know, in special cases, of the optometrist walking the patient out and conferring with the optometrist. Mm-hmm. I've seen practices where they actually pull the optician in the room during the exam. I really like that, because then it's a, you know, a communal and a collective effort to address this person's needs. That's phenomenal. And, you know, practices that are implementing that are going to be more successful than others.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, I have mixed emotions. Sorry, Jen, I have mixed emotions about that, right? Because I love when you can just be one-on-one with that patient and the optical team member and give that transfer, right? But at the same time, if you go out on that showroom floor and you're educating that patient, and other patients have heard that education, they know that you are helping them and helping everyone in there and giving them the same thing. And when they hear you or see you telling someone else, they know that that's the real deal. So it's like it can go both ways, But I think, you know, the main thing is, you know, you have to, the doctor and the optical team member, they have to have a relationship. If I come out there and I say one thing about a lens technology, they should know everything about that lens technology to say, in addition to what Dr. Lyerly said, this lens also has this. So that's even more value that you're going to get to make your eyes feel more comfortable and do away with any fatigue, strain, or whatever else it may be. They have to be the backup support to reinforce the point that we bring home, because we're going to reinforce that point in the exam room, and any additional value they can bring with something we already touched on is going to be king when they're making that interaction.
Absolutely. And another thing that we haven't mentioned is that if you have a staff member, optician or not, somebody who's highly trained that you can trust, they're a safety net for you as well, you know, because it allows, they can provide reassurance to a patient. And, you know, sometimes, you know, a difficult refraction or anything like that, sometimes, you know, they can liaise between, you know, between your side of the office and theirs and help, you know, for lack of a better word, calm the patient, because it could be a little bit unnerving experience when your prescription's not working out and things like that. They definitely are a resource to if a recheck is required and things like that. And if there can be collaboration, it's definitely, you know, a step in the right direction.
Well, I want to pick your brain about keeping staff, because after we put so much energy and training into building up their career, again, they become such phenomenal catches for other groups that may have a bigger pocketbook that would want to poach them away. So what can you do, especially as a small practice, to make yourself the most attractive workplace for your employees?
Yeah. And I mean, there's no secret recipe for this, right? And I like to believe that if we've gotten to where we're saying we are, where you have a great employee and they're a huge value to the practice, I like to believe that they know how they got there. They know it's because of your investment in them. And there's a certain you know, appreciation that I think that staff members will have towards you if you've taken them, and what we've talked about up to this point, turned a job into a career, given them this career, given them an opportunity to grow, people tend to be quite loyal. Now, will some slip through the cracks? Sure. I mean, there's salary considerations and there's perks and there's benefits, but you know what? There's lots of research out there that shows that, you know, access to training, access to career development, and just being in a great environment supersede salary and perks. So I think you just have to believe in your method. I think you have to implement a good method, and you have to, you know, help nurture the people along the way, and you have to believe that they appreciate what you've done. You're never going to have a secret. I mean, unless you want to pay them, you know, $10 over industry standard, maybe then you'll keep them. But I don't think anyone's, you know, jumping out to do that. You just have to believe, create a great work environment, show them that they're able to grow. It may surprise you. I'm a huge advocate for equal pay or good pay for opticians and support staff. I don't believe in annual raises. I believe in merit raises. And I believe in, as people, you know, increase their knowledge, their certification and training, that's when raises come. So it's one of those things that if you show that you're able to support growth and compensate for it, then I think people will stick around.
So I'm curious, how important is, I mean, being in the office is one thing, you know, shooting them some more money is another thing, but how important is it to have these team members, especially opticians and optical team members, to actually attend conferences like Vision Expo, CECO? Because personally, I feel like I learned so much at those events and I make so many connections and network that as a result of going to these conferences in person, I have grown as an optometrist and I have grown as a person. How much value does this add to those opticians? Is this something that we should see more opticians attending, or is this just something that it's not a thing? I mean, talk to me about that a little bit.
No, it's huge. It's huge. There's actually entire conferences that designated towards opticians. And lots of opticians go to Vision Expo, the big ones, right? Yeah. And it's definitely something that practice owners should be encouraging, because where else are you going to get this information? You know, I mean, unless you're actively seeking it, going on websites, and I don't think a lot of staff members are doing that unless they're super passionate. And if you have one of those, make sure you hold on to them. But yeah, like, and it would make you feel like a professional, wouldn't it? If you're being sent to conferences. And again, it reiterates the concept that you're in a career. This is what career people do. They go to conferences, they learn more, they expand their knowledge. So there's no downside to this. It's, you know, imagine the cost of sending someone to a conference, maybe a couple hundred, especially if it's local, you know, $100, $200. Imagine the return on investment when they come back and they know all sorts of stuff, right? Yeah. It's a no-brainer for me.
It's priceless, right? And Sean, what I'm thinking about is, imagine if you have a smaller practice, right? You go as the optometrist, your optician goes with you, and you're sitting down and you're listening to someone talk about lens technology, or you're hearing someone talk about how to prescribe from the chair and how they should communicate with their optician. Like, that empowerment there, being able to see that, and now you're envisioning, you know, that's us, that's Batman and Robin, we're doing it together. Like, that is so powerful. It is so powerful.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of my reasons why I'm a big fan of Vision Expo, a fan of SECO, but one of my favorite conferences is Transitions Academy. And the reason why I love it so much is because they help me grow as a person, because they always bring some expert in to talk about something that can just make you better. But they incorporate doctors, they incorporate opticians in their programming. They have them work together on the programming to show that that is truly a team. In order for you to give that ultimate patient experience and give that patient what they truly need, you must work together in order to make that impact. And I firmly believe that conferences are a big deal. And if you can really go as a team, it can elevate your practice tremendously.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
I think that's, I mean, the last year and a half, and we draw, I mean, that's what's putting everybody into a really hard place right now, because it is extremely hard when in the office, there are employees that we have hired that I've never seen their face, like truly seen their actual face, because we wear masks full time in the office, right? We're not having social get togethers as an office. We're not going to conferences as an office, right? Where many of us aren't traveling because we have small kids at homes and we can't risk like being on an airplane and bringing anything home to them. So with the way the world is right now, I think it is harder than ever to make any workplace fun, exciting, experiential. And I think we're all hungry for a return to, like, when can we do this? When can we enjoy our coworkers and do things together that's fun? And until that time is available to us, like, it is a grind right now. And we just got to kind of hang in there and try the best we can to bring joy to our fellow coworkers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a great way of getting people to interact and learn, something that, you know, principal we used to do in school, and we've done it in our I've done it in multiple practices before, is having, for the lack of a better term, like an independent study unit. Have your staff research a topic and teach the group after hours. What a great, you know, it's a great way to interact. It's a great way for that individual to do the research and learn. And it's a great way for the staff to learn from a peer, right? And imagine, you know, if you run a series, a symposium, or, you know, every week, every staff member gets a new topic. No, not everyone's going to be comfortable doing that, but it does help, you know, encourage leadership and learning, and you can make fun of it. You know, grab a pizza and just, you know, listen to a little bit of optical knowledge, right? You know, we got to do whatever we can when these conferences aren't available. And you're right, the social aspect's been like almost eliminated, right? And I attended a conference not long ago on the computer, and it definitely wasn't the same. And you don't get all the swag either, right? So
yeah, and it's, I mean, for me, And I might have told Jen this in the past, you know, over the last year, I've done a lot of virtual things. Now, I'm not going to lie, I love to be able to sit here and give my lecture, my presentation, and I'd have to jump on a plane and miss my family, right? But the downside is, I like to have fun with the crowd and make jokes and hear them laugh and see them smile. Now I'm sitting here laughing at myself, and I'm looking at like, damn, are they laughing at anything I'm saying, or are they looking at me like I'm a complete idiot because I'm laughing at myself, you know? So I can't wait for when we go to conferences that people are actually really showing up by the thousands, and we're able to shake hands and kiss babies and give hugs and give high fives and just really go back to how things were. I mean, I am dying for that, and I can't wait for it to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sean, thank you so much for sharing all of these great ideas with us this evening. I know I'm very excited to take that last idea that you had about empowering someone with the topic for a monthly or a quarterly staff meeting and learn from each other, since yeah. we don't have the luxury of bringing outside people in like we usually had in the past to do like a catered lunch or things like that. So, hey, we've got to be inventive, but we can't sacrifice socializing with each other, training and learning with each other, which is what unfortunately I think the past year a lot of people have done, where it's just like, you get up, you go, you do it, you get home, and then you do it again. We can't keep living like that. It's not going to be sustainable.
I agree 100%.
Tell everybody where they can follow along and learn more about Modern Optician if they're interested in getting some excellent staff training to their office.
Sure. Well, modernoptician.com, best place to check it out. Like I was saying, most of the programs were originally designated to help student opticians pass board exams, but most recently we're focusing primarily on optometric staff, you know, getting them up to snuff on all the things we talked about and empowering them, the key word, towards bigger and better things. As far as social media goes, I'm on Instagram. I love LinkedIn, Sean Lessard on LinkedIn, very active on there. And if you ever have any questions about any of the things we talked about, Sean@modernoptician.com, email anytime.
Thank you guys so much for all your great comments and questions as always. And we will be back with the new episode. If you guys ever have ideas about things that you want to hear about, you know, we're passionate about bringing you what you want. So message us anytime.
All right. Have a great one. Stay healthy and blessed. Talk to you guys next time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right.
All right, colleagues, and it's a wrap. Thank you dearly for hanging out with the Defocus Media team. We hope truly something resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to give us 5 stars and make sure you follow us on all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it. And our handle is @Defocus Media on all platforms. And until next time,